are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Great. How you doing?
Well, as for somebody that just turned 65 yesterday, I think I'm pretty lucky.
Ah, happy birthday. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. How about you? How old are you? You mind me asking?
I don't know. I'm actually 55.
55. God Double dang nickel. It, man.
Yeah, man. Time goes.
You don't know how young you are today compared to me.
I'm usually the old guy around here, so it's nice to have somebody older then.
Yeah, I understand. Hey, I heard from Sparkle, you tore something, some muscles recently?
You know, I tore both my triceps, both tendons off the bone on both arms too. And so I got one of them fixed. So I have one of them, I had surgery because I need to use them still so I could use my other arm. So once I can use this one to like feed myself because I can't bend it, then I'll get the other one done. So looking at about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Yeah, terrible. Never had an injury.
Had an injury?
All these years of training, competing. And then so how did it happen? So I need to come up with a better story because it's not a real exciting story. So I had just finished a full body workout and I ended with triceps, but then I was doing a plank on a rope. So if you can imagine a rope hanging from the ceiling and you crawl down into a plank position with your arms extended for the app and they just go tore. At the same time, they both, I could hear it kind of like tear inside, like, you know, like,
man. So you knew immediately something was pretty bad.
Yeah. And then I couldn't, anything that your triceps, I couldn't push anything. I lift my arm up. They tested it the next day. I lift my arm up and it just fall, hit me in the head.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It was horrible.
So how long did it take before you got your surgery?
So I got hurt on a Wednesday, got to the doctor the next day, an MRI the next day on Friday, and then surgery on Wednesday. You know, since it's not a lot going on, I guess I lucked out. They got me in really quick.
So how'd you eat during those times? Somebody had to feed you?
You know, after a couple of days, I could use my arms a little bit. I could use my biceps too, you know, so I just couldn't use anything you do to push.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, but luckily I was able to do that.
That's brutal. What's the recovery time for that?
So from surgery date to go back to the gym to start building up is 4 months, they tell me.
I don't know if you've thought this. Are you an athlete, former athlete?
I am, yeah. So I always grew up an athlete since a little kid.
So you've been, I mean, as we all know, the longer you play athletics, it's not if you're going to get hurt, but it's when. But my question.
I've had little minor stuff, but never nothing major like this, but man. Yeah.
And have you already let the little bit of doubt in your mind, like, I wonder if I can get back all the way after all this is said and done? And
well, yeah, especially after being 55 now. Yeah, I always think that now. I'm like, man, do I have the juice to kind of push harder and get back?
And, you know, the thing about that, too, is I need to hook my phone up here, so I apologize me bending over.
No problem.
But, you know, the thing about that is, in your head, I had a surgery on a hernia, and it's in my stomach. Sorry about that. Mess up right there. And just having a hernia surgery, and it was fixed, I was, like, so leery about lifting again, you know, doing curls, for example. Anything that I thought would put pressure there.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that takes a while to get over that, I bet, you know, after you kind
of get
that gun shyness.
Well, not only that, I had my you know, the bodybuilder mentality. I don't know. You've done some bodybuilding, right? Correct?
Correct. Yeah, I did a lot of bodybuilding.
Okay. So, you know, the mindset of a bodybuilder is that of someone who's demented at times and tortured the mindset.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And, when I went and first had the surgery done, I went and looked for a doctor. And if a doctor told me it was going to be like 3 months or 4 months to come back, I just went to another doctor until I got the answer I wanted. You know what I mean? Okay. And I found a guy. Absolutely. I found a guy, and he's actually in his name, Lenny. I don't know, his first name was Lenny, but he was there in Fresno area, and he did this certain surgery that was just a patch. No, I mean, he said I'd go back in a month. I said, "You're the man." And well, you know, long story short is that the patch at some point just slipped and it had to go have done a second time. And, you know,
oh no.
Yeah. A second time, this time it's stuck, but boy, it's in the back of my head. If I felt like a little twinge, I thought, oh my God, is it going to happen again or what?
Yeah, know? They kept telling me to take it easy. It takes time because it tore away from the bone. So they said, you got to make sure it adheres to the bone. If we have to go in again, it's going to be harder. So I'm really taking my time and being patient with this one so far. So far, so good, I think.
Let me ask you, though. First of all, welcome to Serious Growth Podcast. And
thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, but thanks for inviting me.
With your patience level, I mean, is that something that you have to fight against all the time? Because I do. And I think any athlete, especially that gets involved in bodybuilding to the point where you're competing at a pretty high level, you have to have a certain mindset that is based on extreme behavior. I'll speak for myself. And I think that extreme behavior works for and against us, or against me. And I'm always fighting with that. Even to this day, I got to keep holding myself back. So how do you think this is going to impact you as far as coming back? Are you that person that has to fight yourself that way mentally?
You know, I think I'm getting better as I'm getting older with patience, as far as, you know, when I get the green light, I'm going to try to, you know, steadily push it, but I'm truly, really trying to really hold back now. So, because I've heard the horror stories of doing this, trying to go too early, and next thing you know, you're ruptured again. So, but once I get the green light, that's where I'm going to have the difficulty of, like, not pushing too hard and giving myself time, I'm sure. But I'm trying to be smarter. Like I said, like, when you get older, hopefully we get a little smarter.
Questionable. I don't know, man.
I'm
still fighting with that myself at 65. 55, I was still – at 55, I'm still a young adult, I think. I'm not sure. Hey, listen, I see you're here. You're a veteran, and I wanted to tell you I appreciate your service for us. Thank you for your service.
Serve.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, when you are coming back from this injury, do you plan on competing in shows anymore?
You know, bodybuilding is one of those sports that you could always kind of pick it up, dust it off, and go for it in the Masters. So, you know, it's always a thought, and I'm around it all the time because I'm a judge and a promoter of shows. So it's always kind of in the back of my mind, but I'm getting to the point where I don't know. It's hard to really, like, dig in to train, to go where I need to go to be in that contest shape, I think. So, but it's still always, you know, it's on the table there. My kids here that work here, they compete, and they're always going, we got to do a show together. You know, one last hurrah, you know, so, you know, it's in my mind. Sometimes I think, maybe we'll see if there's a little bit left in the basement, you know, and rev it up.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% committed to that, but that's a possibility always. I didn't close that door completely, I guess.
Yeah. And the thing about that, as you know, and some people don't know that, especially if they've never been in the sport, it's one of those kind of sports that if you don't have heart and soul and everything in, it's pretty difficult to do the right way.
Absolutely. Right.
You know what I mean?
I definitely won't halfway do it. I got to, when I'm all in or I can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those kind of deals. In fact, I came back after a 13-year layoff and
Were you training though during that time, or you just weren't competing? You were just.
At my 13-year layoff? No, I got away, Jim. It was like I abandoned the, almost like I was rebelling against it. And the only way that I can think that, and the reason that I did that was because of all those years prior to that, you know, as you know, it's a surfer fest. I mean, you're dieting constantly. It seems like I was dieting during the times when everybody else was having Christmas parties and, you know, just stuff like that, which that's what we sign up for.
Absolutely,
And then when I took that layoff, I just thought, you know what? I was going through a bunch of crap in my personal life. I just said, I just hated everything. So I just rebelled. I didn't go into the gym. And, you know, I ended up after like 8 or 10 months of not doing a damn thing. I mean, I've always had training studios. So I train clients. But I gained 80 pounds, and it wasn't muscle.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, that's right. That was horrible shape. But as human beings, we respond either to pleasure or pain if there's enough there.
Right.
And one day when I accidentally looked at a reflection in I was walking by a car. And I said, who in the hell is that? It was me. I didn't realize how bad I really did look, you know, living the life of denial. So I got back into it, and I came back again at the age of 53.
All right. And you actually did a show? Oh, wow. You did.
Oh, yeah. I competed at the National Masters. When you competed, you competed in Masters, right?
In the last couple shows I did were Masters, yeah.
And where did you compete?
Where?
Yeah, where?
The last show I did was North American Championships in the Masters.
And where did they hold that? That event?
That was in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh.
Ah, that's where I competed. Pittsburgh.
Okay. Yeah, that's where they have the Master Nationals and the North Americans. They're both
got
the
it.
Same. They seem like the same show. They feel the same. I've done both shows too.
Okay. Like was it a huge show? Show that I went to was like a 2-day show. The first day was, I think, the women. I mean, it was huge.
Yeah, I think they had it broken up in like 3 different shows. I think there were 1,600 competitors total.
Oh,
it was huge. Yeah, it was huge.
How are the quality of athletes and overall and like in your class, was it good?
You know, not great. I mean, it was just like any other show. I thought it wasn't anything spectacular. I just really missed the mark. I tried to come in at a lower weight because I competed for years as a heavyweight, and I thought, you know, I got talked into, let's go down to light heavies. We'll just dry out a little bit more, and it's just, I was too flat and just didn't come in. Where I was really lean, though. I was still the leanest guy, but I was just too sucked up and too flat.
Yeah.
So I think I could have did really well.
Yeah, and how many times did you compete at that show? 1 time, 2 times?
I did 2 times at that show at the North Americans.
Do you remember who the promoter is?
Gary Udit.
That's right. That's the name I remember. I thought it was a great show. I mean,
it's run great. I like that show. Yeah,
it really was. I think they did a really good job at that show. And that was my last time. Anyway, I came back after that layoff, and I did a couple warm-up shows in Culver City. And I can't think of the guy who was putting on those shows, but he was very well known. I don't think he's putting on anymore. But
John Lindsay was down there, that area.
That's right.
John Lindsay,
John Lindsay, that's right. He put on some good shows. Did you ever compete in his shows?
Absolutely, yeah. I used to compete up and down the state a lot back, you know, in the early 2000s. I was competing a ton in L.A., Bay Area, back and forth. So,
did you ever compete against anybody that went on or to be pro, or did you become pro status?
You know, I did not come pro, but I competed against a lot of pros. I competed against Melvin Anthony. I don't know if you remember that. Was that earlier?
Yeah,
era? Like,
yeah, I do.
Him, Richard, a guy named Richard Jones. And I did the USA Championships too one time when you're in the Open. And there was Will Harris and a lot of pros out of there in that group.
Do you remember a guy named Phil Hernon?
I do. You know, a funny story about Phil. You know, I grew up in the Bay Area, but when I moved here, I knew nobody. My dad had moved here. And I go, oh, let me just try to kind of restart. And somebody told me about this gym, and I go up to it, and I go, I wonder if people are, you know, working out here in this area, not knowing. And I walk in, and the first person I see is Phil Hernon.
Oh, man.
And he was a monster. I go, oh, my God, I guess they do work out here.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you know that, but Phil and I, Phil actually did, I wrote these training courses, and one of them was Serious Growth, and Phil was a part of that. When we wrote that training course, Phil was a part of that. All that training and I got to know Phil then, so I know him quite well, actually.
Yeah, I used to know him pretty well.
Yeah, the guy was just absolutely massive, you know.
Yeah, he was one of the big guys even back in that era. He was the mass monster before his time, maybe, before everybody was.
He was an interesting cat if you got to know him, you know.
Oh yeah,
he cracked me up.
Yeah, he was a character for sure. Yeah.
I just talked to him not too long ago, probably, I'm going to say maybe 4 or 5 months ago. I think he's living back in, I don't know, somewhere in the Midwest or back there somewhere.
You know, the last I heard, I want to say he's either in Atlanta or Florida. He was upstate New York for a while.
Yeah.
And the last I heard, he's down in that area.
Yeah. No, he was, his training
kind
was
kind of a small world. We kind of all know each other a little bit one way or another.
What do they call
Flex Wheeler. I used to know Flex Wheeler a little bit more. When he come into town, he used to come to my shop and we'd chit-chat.
That's awful about his leg, huh?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Was that a circulation problem?
That's what they say. I haven't heard a lot of details, but it was some kind of circulation problem. And
yeah.
He lose his leg there.
All right. Let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Supplement store. Okay. So you've been in now 15 years.
Mm-hmm. 15 years.
So doing this stuff. Okay. Now, is that what you do full time, or do you do personal training? A lot of the people that do stuff like this, they train. I have like personal training studios. How about you?
Yeah. No, I just do consultations, just nutrition. And I'll do workout consultations, but I don't go to the gym and train anybody.
Okay.
I'll just do mostly diet. I do mostly nutrition consultation is what I do mostly.
And I assume that you do some prepping for people?
Correct. Yeah. I'll do contest prep, even with the posing, you know, I'm an NPC judge also. So I'll prep people. And then, you know, when we market, it's like, hey, you get to work with a judge. It's kind of a double-edged sword though, because I can't coach at shows because I'm an official.
Oh yeah.
So like when you go to a show. Yeah. So they don't like us to do that, but they let us coach people, but just not if my people are on stage, I have to like declare that I have people in the show and they rotate me out because I'm not
going to
judge my people either. Yeah.
Yeah. So how is the, when it comes to the NPC shows, what's going on in that sport, would you say? Cause I know, you know, back in when I was competing, it changed when I took that layoff and came back after 13 years, it seemed like the whole sport changed because of all the new classes. You know, it was just run differently when I came back. It was kind of shocking actually for me compared to when I started, because I started competing in 82 and it was just bodybuilding really. And then mixed couples and all that kind of stuff.
Miss those, the old days of that. Yeah. It's changed. If I have my promoter hat on, it's nice because we have way bigger numbers and with more categories. But as a bodybuilding purist, you know, I don't like the direction, the way the sport went. And it's just all over the place as far as the 1 minute, it seems like they like the judging one way and then it kind of evolves one way or another. And it's a little tough for the athletes because you prep for a show and you're not sure what they're looking for anymore. It seems like, because it's all over the place.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of confusion with so many categories.
Okay. Back in the days when I was competing, it seemed like the women's categories had that sort of that problem that you're talking about now with people not knowing exactly how to come in. There's a lot of confusion. And it seemed like it was like that with women, especially the women, not so much the men categories. Mm-hmm. And so is that what you're talking about? It seems like that's what's going on in the industry now.
Yeah. But with the added categories for men, there's more, you know, there's the physique and then the classic physique, which is kind of old school bodybuilding.
Yeah.
We're seeing those same things because they're saying they're not wanting people to come in as defined and shredded, but they just want more shape like in the men's physique, which
is
still bodybuilding. So conditioning should always be paramount in my eye as a judge. And that, you know, so sometimes they don't use that criteria. Like they go, okay, no, it's just about more shape, which it kind of evolved that way. Cause at first it was just bodybuilding. And if you fit the height and weight requirements, then you're eligible in that class.
Yeah.
But it seems like it does evolve. And I think that's affecting bodybuilding, open bodybuilding, the different divisions. I feel like they're wanting more aesthetic bodybuilding, even in the mass monsters, even the open categories. The aesthetic guys are placing better. I think that's influenced by the other divisions.
Yeah.
What I see as a judge, at least.
And so is the sport evolving? Has it gotten more popular? Because I know I do. You know who Danny Kekos is?
I don't think I know that name.
Okay, he's the guy that owns Iron Man now. You probably know John Bailey.
Oh, okay.
Remember
John
Bailey?
Yeah. I do, yeah.
Well, Danny bought out Iron Man. He's his organization is the IMBA. It's the it's the natural, basically a natural bodybuilding association.
Right, and I have some athletes in that I prep for those too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So has the sport in NPC, has the sport become more popular, less popular? What's going on in the industry on that side of it?
You know, I think it is definitely more popular because it's opened up. It's more mainstream with the other divisions now. It's not as hardcore, just all bodybuilder like when we were, you know, in our heyday, I guess, doing it. So it's definitely more popular. Like, you know, for instance, when it was just bodybuilding, when I was putting shows on, we'd have 60, 70 competitors. In 2015, with all the categories now, we had 505 competitors.
Wow.
idea of how much bigger the shows are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we started Bikini, we had one bikini competitor. Now it's always over 100 bikini competitors.
Yeah, what I noticed when I came back the second time around, when I was now 52, is how they have the guys go on first and they close with the girls, you know? And
right,
I understood why. I kept the people there longer.
Absolutely, yeah.
For me, it was kind of a benefit. I got my stuff done and I left, you know? It was okay for me. At that point, because some of those events drag on forever, man. I mean, you can lose a pump, you can lose everything just waiting to get on stage.
Right. Yeah. They just keep going and going sometimes.
And the other thing I thought that was I didn't like too much was that when we were coming through, probably you're the same way, we had to actually choreograph a routine that we had to do for, 90 seconds or a minute. And it seemed like anymore when I came back, I'm thinking, what the hell are these guys doing here? They just seem like they're turning on any kind of music and just moving around, and then they walk off. It didn't seem like it was choreographed.
That round isn't scored in amateurs anymore. So I guess some people are into it, some people aren't, you know. And, yeah, we've had people go out there for like 10 seconds. They're like, hit a couple poses and walk off. And
that's not right.
That's not right at all. So,
you know,
that round.
Yeah, I think when I was coming through, it seemed like 25% of your score was, the posing routine. Mm-hmm. And in fact, back in those days, they used to give a trophy for best poser.
Right, yeah.
You remember that?
I do, yeah. I did the Ed Corny show 1 year way back in the 90s, and I won the best poser award at the Ed Corny show. You remember Ed Corny? So.
Yeah, it was like, some people would do the shows just to win best poser. I mean, that meant that much.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Speaking of Ed Corny, did you get to know him?
You know, Ed Corny signed me up for my first gym I ever joined. He was the guy working the gym, and he asked me why I want to join the gym. I told him I just want to get big, and he was kind of like my first coach for bodybuilding at that point. So,
yeah, what a great guy! What a great guy to connect with.
Yeah, that's one of those things. He always had great stories. He always had the great Arnold stories when they hung out and worked out, and it was neat times. Yeah.
And he was the phenomenal poser, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. He's the guy.
I actually met Ed Corny up in the Bay Area. I don't know if you ever heard of a guy named Pax Beal.
That's not ringing a bell for me.
Okay, yeah. He had Pax was very well known. He made, you know those cottage cheese, the plastic containers that cottage cheese goes into?
Mm-hmm.
Pax figured out a way how to mass produce those, and he made an absolute killing back in his day. Yeah, he passed on probably, time flies, but I'm going to say maybe 4 or 5 years ago. He's one of my mentors. But anyway, Pax had a birthday party, and when Pax did stuff, he did like a huge. He invited all these people. Ed Corny was invited to Pax's birthday party, and what blew me away, not only was that the first time I met him, he was in a wheelchair.
Oh,
did you know that?
I did not. No, I did not.
Yeah, I think he had some. He had some heart problems, or maybe even stroke, that took him down. I mean, it was pretty sad. Yeah,
he was for a while, right? You're talking about Ed was in the wheelchair, right? I thought you meant the other guy.
Ed Corny.
Yeah, he had some difficulties during a surgery, and it ended up in a wheelchair for a while. Oh, then he got out of the wheelchair. He was out of it after a while.
Oh, he was. Okay, so I didn't, when I saw him like that, I was just, kind of sad to see that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my little brief encounter with Ed Corny. Now, when you're in the gym training these days, what does your workout look like? And why are you doing your workout? Before all this happened, mm-hmm. I know you're going to change your,
routine
and everything, but what were you doing up to this point as far as training, and what did that all look like?
You know, I've always been big on, I don't mind experimenting in training. So the last time I actually competed, I did a full body workout every day, the prep for
really?
A show. And a lot of people would say, they'd say you should rest the muscle. And it really depends on how much damage you inflict upon the muscle. So like an example would be like my chest workout was a total of maybe 4 sets. Maybe 5 sets at the most, but usually 3 to 5. But I would do that every day, and I would do every muscle just the same way. And it was a great prep. Actually, I was able to eat a lot more, like stimulating my whole body and all that. And it was pretty good. But that was an experiment, and it worked well. But I typically would do, if I'm not doing a full body, I started doing that more and more as I got older. I would do the typical 3-day, like a 3-day split. I'd do that a lot.
Yeah.
With the regular, the regular old school stuff.
Kind of makes sense to me what you're saying, because I was able to go to – I wrote a book called Bulgarian Burst. It was my first bodybuilding training course in the 80s. I forget when I wrote that damn thing. It must have been in the late 80s, maybe early 90s, but a while back. It was one of five or six that I ended up writing. But what I did is I took a trip to Bulgaria back in those years. And the Bulgarians at that time were dominating Olympic sport. But the thing that was fascinating, I had a trip back there where 26 Americans were invited. I had to apply for the trip. And we went back. And these guys, Jim, were so amazing in their training, their philosophy. And one of the things that they did is they trained five times a day. These are Olympic lifters, and they trained five times a day. So this is I'm going to be leading into what you were doing and doing a full body, but which was unheard of. They were doing 50 to 65 one rep maxes a day, because their belief was the body becomes its function. And as long as you don't overtrain the body to begin with, which you weren't based on what you're telling me, because you cut your sets down, then they proved. And they could prove it in blood tests, because they checked their athletes. They used to take blood out of their ear to check how recovered they were, and they knew which supplements to give them. And they knew that if as long as you didn't exceed 30 minutes in the weight room, no more than 45, but 30 minutes usually, that it was virtually impossible to overtrain the physiology. And that being said, the body could recover within 5 hours. So these guys would keep, you know, a lot of times their training sessions were actually like 15 or 20 minutes. But so that's why they could train five times a day. So I think what you did is kind of goes to that line of thinking. You never overtrained the physiology to begin with. So you could train full body every single day. Your body completely recovered is what I'm saying. Right. Because it sounds like you discovered that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So when you were training like that, then what was your strategy for your nutrition? What were you doing back then? Or what do you believe that is sort of the right way for you to eat?
Well, I've never been a guy that can handle a lot of, I'm a big eater, but I can't eat a lot of protein. And I'd always get my friends and other colleagues that judge say, oh, you need to really crank your protein up. And I just never felt that was the right, correct way. And especially for me. And now I go super low protein, actually. But I, it was pretty much a cycling carb type of diet that worked good. I was always, like, again, experimenting with other diets, and I would get in shape in any kind of diet. I can do keto, I can do carb cycling, and I was a skinny guy when I started, so it was always easy to get lean and get in shape for me. So during that prep, I was just doing a carb cycling diet, and I barely had to adjust my diet, because I guess I was just so active doing a full body that my metabolism was really heated up, and it just kept moving. It was a nice prep versus, you know, I was burning so many calories, I guess, by doing stimulating my whole body rather than, if you think about just an arm workout day where I'm just training arms every day, I was doing full body. So like I said, I ate more during that prep, and that's at 50 years old when I was doing that, than I, you know, in previous years that I can remember eating that much getting ready for a show.
Yeah. Were you staying pretty close to your, like, did you have much of an off season in terms of, back when I was doing it, the thing to do back then was bulk up and, you know, put on a lot of weight. I get up to 300, 310 pounds before I started dieting. And, you know, early on, that was a mistake because I put on too much body fat. I learned over the years to stay closer to the show. How far away from your body weight when you actually competed were you away from your off-season weight when you started?
Well, you know, I typically try to never exceed 10% body fat in our with our caliper test.
Yeah.
And I would still typically lose anywhere between 30-35 pounds to get ready for a show. So it wasn't crazy. I've had times where I did the crazy bulk and I lost, you know, to get ready for a show, I lost 70 pounds. But after that one time, I was like, nah, it's hard, too hard to hold on to muscle that way. So
it is
better to stay in some kind of shape.
Yeah. We learned that pretty quickly, don't we? Because you come in, it's like, all this damn muscle I thought I put on, it just towards the end there just went away. It was like all for naught, maybe a few pounds more. But yeah, we learned that lesson in a hurry. When you say that you keep your protein intake low, what does that mean as far as grams of protein daily?
So in recent years, and again, I'm not competing now and I haven't competed in 5 years, at 240 pounds of body weight, my protein intake was probably 120. And I,
120. Okay, when you say that you had low protein intake, tell me what exactly that means. How many grams are you taking in?
Okay, so at 240 pounds, I'm only taking in anywhere from 100 to 120 grams of protein. Okay.
And that's daily.
And that's daily, yeah. And I'm basing that on my recovery and my strength and how I'm feeling as far as that category of nutrient. And I felt like my recovery was good, my strength was good. So I always try to see how low I can go in protein, you know, instead of doing, you know, twice your weight, where a lot of people would always suggest to do when I was competing. I just never thought that felt right on my digestive system anyway. But I feel good with the lower protein. And so now that gives me more calories to go towards, you know, carbohydrates and fuel. And so that's how I pretty much do my diet now. You know, again, I'm not competing though. If I was competing, I would probably, if I'm going in a more of a deficit of nutrients, my protein would probably have to go up at that point. But I don't think it has to be extremely high. That's what I try to, do nowadays.
You remember Mike Mincer?
Absolutely. That's actually where I got a lot of that from. His protein intake was low for the bodybuilders, right?
Yeah. And I met Mike and got to know him pretty well because I trained quite a bit at Gold's Gym. And those days, I met a lot of the pros down there, and he was one of them. I first met him in a Las Vegas show. A really nice guy. He was very accessible. And, you know, the guy was a genius. He really was. And he was kind of crazy that way because he's so
smart.
Right,
yeah,
smart.
I heard a lot about that.
Oh, yeah. That was true. Yeah. But, yeah, when you're describing what you were telling me, it kind of reminded me of Mincer. I'm right there because he believed in taking like a half a gram per 1 pound of body weight was sufficient.
Right. Absolutely. You know? I think so, too.
Yeah.
And it's easier in your digestive system is what's nice, too. I'm really big into that, how my digestive system, you know, it's talking to me, what's going on there, you know.
Yeah. You're the first person. I've interviewed a bunch of people, especially people in the sport. You're the first person that's described how you – monitor your protein. I mean, I'm really interested how you were taking you were basing your protein intake, if I've got this right, based on how your recovery was. And I tell you what, I think that you have to be so damn intuitive and instinctive to be able to follow that kind of regimen. Because I've never heard that before, taking just enough protein to get by to allow your body to recover. I've never heard it put that way ever.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so. That's my new thing there.
Well, you know, I keep learning stuff and I appreciate that, but it kind of tells me that the, you know, there's a lot of ways to get to a result, and that's what makes it so interesting. Not, you know, we're, even though we're humans, we're the same, but we're different in a lot of ways. And you're the example of that. And I think, again, maybe I'm just connecting dots that are too far away. It almost seems like you had to adapt because of your digestive system not really being able to take in that kind of protein or making your body feel bad. It almost sounds like you totally listen to your body.
That's what I try to do. I really do, because I have, again, you know, people are always thinking you need so much protein, and I tried it, and I just didn't feel right, didn't feel any better, actually, and I had a lot of, you know, digestive issues when my protein gets really high. And I usually don't have, you know, I don't have like stomach issues, but when my protein is that high, it does really seem to play it's a little tougher on the digestive system. So, so I just try to listen to my body and do that.
Yeah. Sure. And again, I would just skin a cat. So when you're working with people that are contest prepping, do you have them fill out a diet? How do you go, what's your process, you know, to work through when you're dealing with people to make them the most efficient? So, I mean, cause you're bound to find and run across people who are having some of the issues that you are, or they're glucose intolerant or whatever. How do you get to that point where you're making sure that your athlete is on the right program?
Well, you know, at first I try to I use, you know, a body fat measurement, see what their lean mass is. And then I come up with macros, like how much protein, how much carbs, how much fat. And then it's me learning their body. You know, I have to set the bar somewhere. And then it's kind of listening to what their body's doing. And I have a lot of athletes that will do some that I'll even do keto. And I'm not a big fan of keto for bodybuilding, but I have some people do great on it. And then I'll do some people that we do really high carb cycling. And So it's me getting to learn that person. And I have some athletes that are just so gifted that I could throw any diet together and they seem to get in shape. You know, those people that I have people that come in, they do everything wrong and they look amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I go over what they're doing. I go, you're doing everything wrong, but I look at you and you look like you're ready to do a show. Like, you know, I get those. So much genetics involved in that. And I have the INBA, like we talked about earlier, the INBA. So I prepped a local lady for the World Championships Women's Physique, actually. And she does keto for her prep. And she does great. She won the World Championships at Women's Physique.
So let me ask you why you're not a big fan of keto, especially for, did you say contest prep or just in general?
I don't mind it for a short period of time. I don't like it for a lifestyle diet. So I guess in that aspect, I don't like it. For short periods of time, I like it. I just don't think it's nutrient dense enough. You know, I'm a big believer in the fruits and vegetables, and you get so much more nutrients and carbohydrates. So I like to go that route first.
Gotcha.
But I still use that as a tool if I need it. I use that keto as a tool, though.
Yeah, I understand. And I know this next question has to do with, it depends on the athlete, how far out of shape they are. But generally, what would you recommend in the ideal world as far as length of time for a pre-contest training regime, including, you know, a training regimen, I should say, including not only training but the diet? How long do you want somebody to pre-contest,
ideally? Well, depending on how fat they get in their off season, I'll usually generally – you know, the lowest I like, I guess people that stay really in good shape all year, maybe we'll go like 8 weeks, but most people were looking at like 12 to 14 week preps to cruise into it better. And instead of, I have a lot of athletes that check in with me off season just to make sure they're not getting out of control, and we'll put a cap on their body fat. Like, okay, like I have some women, okay, we're going to gain weight. You can have a little fun with your food. We'll try to have some structure. But once you exceed, let's say like 15% body fat, for the women, usually, then we have to reset and diet down for a while, even if it's an off season. And the guys, I usually do that same thing. And depending on the athlete, some of them I'll cap at 10, some of them at 12. So we make sure we don't get too fat, because it's tough. I've had some guys come at 20% body fat and I'm going, whoa, what'd you do here?
Yeah.
It's just a long road to get to the show, to get in show shape from there.
So the people that you're working with, are they all local people? Because if you're doing, I mean, let me ask it a different way. Do you work with people that are out of town and, you know, somewhere where they can't get to you?
I do. Most of my people, I do like to work in person. I don't like to do too many distant stuff. I know that's more popular and more, you know, you can reach more people. But I really like to see the person in person. I really get a good look at them. In pictures, it's just hard for me to really gauge how things are coming along. But I do that. I have some people that are even overseas that I work with. But I try to see the people if I can.
So obviously when it comes, because it sounds like body fat testing is pretty important to you. So for those people that are not able to come to you, do you have them get a body fat test, or then how do you address that?
I do. Hopefully they can do that and have a body fat test. Just as a guide, I don't have a goal. We have a goal number, but that's not as important as the visual. Because I'll have people at 6% and they look better than people at 3%, so they're ready to go.
Exactly.
So that's not always my goal, but it's just a marker to see our progress.
Yeah,
I use that as a progress checker rather than an indication that we're ready. My eyeballs will tell me when we're ready.
There you go. I think that's smart, because it's not just one thing that you base your result on. There's factors there, and you're mentioning them actually. Mm-hmm. And I think that's smart. Okay, so when it comes to then your supplements, if I ask you, is there a supplement that you think is the most important one? I mean, I know there may be a few, but which one comes to mind as far as what do you think is a big daddy in supplementation and why?
You know, I think a really big one, and it's kind of something that people think about, but they don't really put it in their diet, is fiber. I'm really big on fiber because I'm really big on digestive function.
So what do you recommend? I know, like, besides diet, as a supplement, what would you recommend as the best source of fiber? And I'm assuming that we're going to address soluble and insoluble, but what do you think is the best supplement and why for that?
Well, I like people to do something like a psyllium husk base, because it's a stronger, more bulking fiber to make sure our digestive system is getting its exercise and working. Especially when we have a restrictive diet, because now fiber goes low when we're prepping people and a calorie deficiency for shows, their fiber usually drops off too. Right. So we need that fiber not only to go to the bathroom, but for detoxing and for the biome in your gut to create the good bacteria. So that's why I'm really big on fiber. And in, the higher, the better. Some people will tell you should cap your fiber at, 40 grams of fiber, but I would slowly creep it up as high as you can tolerate.
How much of that needs to be soluble versus insoluble, or is there a percentage?
No, I really don't mind what the percentage is. It depends on like the diet of that, what we're doing. Because a lot of the, when we're so restrictive, we're doing more insoluble fibers. It's tough because when we're cutting out all the fruits and things like that in competition people's diet, which in a normal diet, I wouldn't cut out fruit in anybody's diet. But in the show preps, probably 99% of the people, we cut the fruit out at some time.
But if you took a high degree of, again, I'm asking, I took a Asylum husk. But my question is this, if you took too much insoluble fiber, that means that your body can't break that down. Is that correct? Or am I wrong on that?
Well, fiber, no fiber, your body's really breaking down. It's passing through you, but it's detoxing and it's bulking and it's doing what fiber does for you. And it's feeding that good bacteria. So fiber's not absorbed by your body, really.
Okay, so you can't take too much to the point where you get stopped up. Is that right?
If you rev it up too quick, if you go from 0 to 100 too fast, then definitely you'll get stopped up. But if you slowly work it up, then that's how you should.
Your body adapts to that. Okay, correct. I got that. Okay, so aside from that, what would you say would be for performance in the gym? Is there a supplement that you like the most?
Creatine is a really nice one because it really does help your extra reps and your recovery in between sets. Pre-workouts are the most popular thing nowadays, but they're so stimulant high. I'm not a really big fan of those. I think the better way to go is making sure you're really hydrated for your workouts. So products that more support that. I'm big on keeping salt in a diet, but it's good salt, good healthy, mineral dense salt.
Is that like sea salt? What do you mean by that?
Like a sea salt, yeah. So there are sea salts that are a little more rich in minerals, like a Celtic sea salt or a Redmond sea salt that have a higher mineral-based salt.
Oh, okay.
I like those a lot better for clients. Okay. I have clients that will do that right before the gym. They'll put it in just in water or put it in their pre-workout and add salt, and they actually feel a lot better, better pump. But with better hydration in your muscles, you're going to have less chance of injury and better performance.
What that salt's doing, because when I think salt, I think sodium. And so what that salt's doing is keeping the water in the muscle longer, like creatine?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And then how is that different than just a regular old salt compared to the one that's more dense? Is it just going to hold more water?
Right. Regular table salt isn't only salt. It just has so much other junk in it, and it's low in mineral. So it's not going to have all the benefits. Without the minerals, it doesn't really open up the cells to take in absorption of nutrients or fluids. So you're not going to really hydrate on a low mineral body.
I like what you just said because you told me why. I mean, that it really opens up so your body can accept more minerals. Is that right? Did I hear
correct.
That?
Right.
Beautiful. Okay, that's good. I never knew that, to be honest with you. I kind of lumped it all into one, salt is salt, I guess. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Okay, so as far as the creatine, are you using as a pre- and post-workout or just a pre-workout?
I use it as probably just a pre, just something you, it's a lifestyle sport. I mean, nutrient, because you need to keep a saturation level. You need to use it all the time and build it up in your body or it doesn't work as efficiently. So even the days you don't work out, you should be consuming at least a maintenance dose of that. So it's something you just take all the time, just kind of like a vitamin, maybe, if you will.
Yeah. What about, do you believe in vasodilators, the supplements?
Yeah, your body naturally does that, but I do like those for people, and it used to be more important to feel and train for a pump, but the science is saying that's good to tie your mind and muscle connection, which is great, but it's really not the end all. Like training for a pump doesn't make your muscles grow anymore, because if people are on a keto diet where they have very low glycogen in the muscle, they don't even get a pump. They don't really feel the muscle contract as well, but they're still training well.
Yeah.
So the pump isn't as important like in the pumping iron days, and Arnold, used to say we train for the pump,
Yeah.
I don't think that the science behind it says the pump is not really building
indicator.
Muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
it does help you feel your muscle better.
So what do you recommend and suggest for those people that want to use something? Let's just say that we want to expand our, you know, the arteries and the blood vessels. What do you use for that if you're to use a supplement? Or would you even recommend that?
Absolutely, yeah. So we do like a lot of pre-workout products at our shop here. And citrulline seems to be the front runner, where arginine was that when it first kind of hit the market, arginine and different arginine malates and different types. Citrulline seems to be the better choice nowadays, and the reason citrulline seems to be better because it has a, it does better at passing through your stomach and through the stomach acid, so that seems to absorb better into the muscle.
Doesn't arginine have to go through the liver, which loses some of its efficacy? The
liver and stomach and all that,
And so citrulline takes a different path. It's kind of what I'm hearing from you, and it doesn't have to deal with that. Okay, so it makes it more effective. Okay. How about things like beta alanine? I'm assuming you've done all this stuff, but these are some of the things that I've done.
And so the beta alanine is great. Yeah, I like that supplement. I've seen a lot of the pre-workouts, and it kind of works on the energy pathways too, but a different kind of way than creatine. You know, it's a little different, but it's real similar. And the end result of it is real similar to creatine's result of energy and recovery during workout.
The thing about with me is like, you know, so many things that you take, especially with nutrition, you really don't know if it's working because sometimes you really can't feel it. But with beta alanine and niacin, I take niacin. I always like that.
Niacin's
whether it's working or not, when I get the tingly or when I get that flush, I'm going, yeah, baby, this stuff is working, right? And then what's your favorite for, do you take anything to help the body recover from workouts?
You know, after your workout, I like people to have their protein drink after for faster absorption, you know, then it's going to be a faster absorbing than eating food. So that's when I like people to do like a recovery drink, depending on what we're doing. It'll be like a protein with aminos and some glucose in there. And just depending on what program we're doing.
Cause when I'm dieting, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I guess when I'm prepping people for shows, I'm actually, unlike I get a lot of people coming in and their coaches want them to take BCAAs like before their workout. And I only do that when I'm trying to help somebody gain weight or get bigger. During the contest prep, I do not use BCAAs because your body will use that as a fuel source when you cut your calories too low. So I'm like, you know, you're better off not doing it.
Yeah.
So that's something.
And then the protein that you're suggesting, is it a whey protein or is it a more of a slower acting protein at that point?
Definitely going to be like a fast acting after post-workout because I want like fast absorption and recovery. Yeah. So I usually go with a whey isolate protein more often than not.
And then otherwise you don't put anything that's going to slow that release. Like you wouldn't want to bulk it up with ice cream, for example, because that'll slow the release of the protein. Yeah. Okay. That's kind of similar stuff that I was doing. Mm-hmm. Listen, we're going to wrap this thing up here, but I wanted to, if you want to promote something that you're doing, I think we've had a very interesting story and we know about you and what you do there. You're in Fresno, aren't you?
I'm in Clovis, actually. Fowler and Herndon by the GB3 in Clovis.
Okay. So were there anything that you would like to share with our people that are going to be watching the show as far as promoting something or letting us know where to find you? Would you like to do that? Now's a good time.
What I really do always when people come in asking about like what supplement for what goal, I always really stress the base of everything we do is our nutrition base and trying to learn how to listen to your body. When your body will tell you what's going on if you listen to it. If your stomach, if you're having discomfort digesting, there's certain things. So I'm really big on wellness along with the bodybuilding. We're not just all bodybuilders. We just want to, I guess as you get older, we start looking for more wellness and health. So I do study a lot of like holistic nutrition and practices that way. So I'm big into that. So, you know, and during what's going on and nowadays with all this COVID, we really haven't had a lot of instruction on like, how do we build our immune system in that? And I do try to help people along those lines. So that's kind of what I try to do here.
Is there a website that people can go to access information from you?
So we do have an Instagram. It's Flex Factory. And then this is, as you see behind me, our address and phone number and whatnot, but we do not have a website. You would think I should have one, but I'm one of those not so savvy guys, but I need to, become that way, I guess.
It's a scary world to go into, let me tell you, Jim. I mean, I did it, but it's a long learning curve from somebody. Look, And just right. think, I'm 65. You realize how long that learning curve has been for me? It's brutal. I don't know if it's that's really necessary, good... but I don't think it can hurt. That's for sure.
Right.
Okay. Well, then, listen, it was, I really appreciate you taking the time to come to the show and share your story. I hope and wish for you a full recovery and that you're back at it again, because I know how much that will mean to you. I can relate to that.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely. You know? And hopefully things get back to normal. We have our two shows that we do here. We do the Fresno Classic in April, and in September we put on the Central Cal. So hopefully when things get back to normal, we'll be back to those. And then I'd like to have you out as my guest at those. Anytime you want to come out, come and check those shows out. I'm sure it'll be a lot different. I don't know if you've been to a show in a while, but.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a lot different. Everything's going to be different. And I'm going to take you up on that, because I actually, I give trophies out at the March Fresno show. Fresno Classic, I think it might have been called.
Okay, yeah.
Long time ago. So when I was in my heyday, kind of. And so I gave trophies out. It's a very good show. So I'd like to do that. And maybe you can, I don't know, I'm not really totally up on all the scheduling anymore, but if you can think about it, maybe send me a little alert or something. I'd love to do that and meet you in person.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Plan on that.
All right, Jim. I appreciate your time. Have a good day, okay?
Thanks, you too.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.